In 2026, 3CR is celebrating 50 years on air.
Coming up is a podcast brought to you by the dedicated and diverse volunteers at 3CR. Just a quick message before you get there. For the month of June, we're asking listeners to donate to the station to help keep us going. We rely on the generous donations of the community to survive. Go to 3cr.org.au/donate and show your support for community-owned and community-run media. Thanks for your support and happy listening.
And welcome to the Radioactive Show, produced at the studios of 3CR Melbourne and heard nationally on the Community Radio Network.
Welcome to the Radioactive Show. My name's Manju. I'm a coordinator for the Nuclear Free Collective. I'm joined by the other coordinator of the Nuclear Free Collective.
My name is Reed.
We'll be your hosts for this episode of the Radioactive Show, and we've been hosting the Radioactive Show once a month. This week, we're mostly going to be focusing on something called the Roxby Downs Indenture Agreement, which is quite fitting because this piece of legislation has, in the last week, become very relevant once again. And our plan for the 50 years of 3CR celebrations and Radiothon was to be going back into the archives, starting with the decade of 1976 to 1986. And 1982 is when this legislation came to pass originally. So for some context about Roxby Downs, do you want to say what Roxby Downs is, Reed?
Yeah, well, in a way, Roxby Downs is a state within the state of South Australia, if you look at the legislation and the Roxby Downs Indenture Act of 1982, as Manju was just saying. So over 30 years ago, the South Australian government basically made all of these legal exemptions and privileges, handed over 1.5 million hectares in Central Australia to BHP. It's in Central South Australia. Good catch. including the Roxby Downs mine and surrounding areas. Basically, some of the most important environmental and Indigenous rights legislation is overridden by the Indenture Act.
Yeah, and there's quite a few different acts that the Indenture Agreement allows BHP to override. So the Aboriginal Heritage Act is one of them, the Environmental Protection Act, the Freedom of Information Act, the Natural Resources Act, and then also the Development Act and the Mining Act.
And yeah, Water Resources Act.
Water Resources Act, yep. Yeah, so, yeah, pretty much Olympic Dam and this, like, huge uranium mine were, from 1982, exempt from environmental laws, water management laws, Aboriginal heritage and cultural protection laws. And, yeah, you can't apply the Freedom of Information Act either.
And yet these are laws that apply everywhere else in South Australia.
The Act was amended in 2011, and Reed found a very, I don't know,
telling
quote from a Liberal Party member called Martin Hamilton Smith. Do you want to say that quote, Reed?
Sure, yeah. Yeah, this SA Liberal Party industry spokesperson said, "Every word of the indenture agreement favours BHP, not South Australians." And he admitted, "We have been put in a position where we must take what we have been served up, whether it gets the best outcomes for the people who elected us or not. There are no political points whatsoever in opposing this bill." That seems like kind of contradictory to me, but yeah. And the Liberal Party gave no amendments when Labor pushed that bill through. And it's actually a bit spooky reading this now because history is repeating.
Yeah. So I guess just to give a bit more context about what's happening now and why this has become relevant again. So originally the Roxby Downs Indenture Act was due to expire in 10 years from now, in 2036, and there was supposed to be kind of an 8-year lead-in process leading up to that and like the potential renewal of this legislation that puts this just insanely destructive uranium mine above
the law.
Yeah, above the law. But recently, a bill has been brought in Parliament which has set that renewal date and I guess like the reassessment of this act back by 10 years. And it was just pushed through. We'll get a bit more into it and read parts of a submission that was made to the standing committee on this issue. But they've pushed back the date by 10 years. And so now it's not going to be due for reassessment by the year 2046. And if the indenture does renew at that point, that means that the mine's lifetime will expand to the year 2086. And
which is just completely untenable for life in that area.
Yeah, and they've just been taking tens of millions of litres of water every single day.
42 yeah. million litres of water every day since 1982.
Yeah, and so it's just very scary, I guess. And
because it's water that can't be replenished for like thousands, maybe millions of years. It's ancient groundwater.
Yeah. So it's the water for the mine is taken from borefields A and B, which are on the Great Artesian Basin, is like where that water comes from. And yeah, it takes just so much time for the water to leak through the rock to fill up the basin. And in such like an arid area, these springs, the mound springs that'll be affected by this, which have already been so affected.
They get depleted. There's not enough water under the ground to generate enough pressure, essentially, to bring the water up to the surface.
Yeah, so I guess that's for people who haven't heard about mound springs. That's what they are. They're these springs. There's like the artesian pressure, which is getting completely like ruined and depleted by the bore fields, which BHP operates to steal the water.
For free.
For free. The water is pushed up by artesian pressure through these vents, I guess, like, yeah. And then the water leaks out, and because it's the minerals, it's quite warm in that area, the water evaporates and the minerals are left behind, and they kind of form these mounds around the vents, which is like the holes where the water comes out. And as the pressure gets lower and lower because of the operation of the bore fields, the water can't reach the top of the vent anymore. And then eventually these mound springs become extinct because it essentially ends up capping itself because the minerals evaporate and it blocks, I guess, the exit point for the water. And these are like often, there's not much water out there. These mound springs are not only like so environmentally important, but yeah, the cultural and spiritual significance.
And the way that they connect to other sources of water and how possible it is to get from one point in the desert to another really relies on each water site and each mound spring area being alive and well for life to be possible.
Totally. And some of these mound springs have like species that are endemic to just that single spring. You know, that's the only place in the entire world. We were lucky enough to go out there with Annie and Al, who will talk to Annie shortly, someone who was at the original Roxby Downs blockades, to talk a bit more about this legislation and stuff. But they've been monitoring the mound springs and measuring them as citizen scientists for a long, long time.
For decades.
And yeah, they showed us this type of button grass. I think it was a pipewort or something. I can't remember the scientific
name. An adorable
name.
Little plant.
So cute. But yeah, that was endemic to only this one spring. And they've been recording kind of the decline of the mound springs over an extended period of time. And it's really devastating to look, to read these reports and just hear about quite a few springs that have gone extinct. And once they go extinct, like, they're done. There's no, you know,
maybe in a million years, but
yeah, when the pressure, comes back enough to bust open the cap that's been left, like, yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, so imagining this extremely unsustainable and violent quantity of water extraction from a uranium mine continuing until 2086 is, yeah, I mean, it's already a heartbreaking situation.
Yeah.
And it's just a really scary prospect.
Oh, yeah. Like, those, the Mount Springs.
They don't have that long.
They don't have until, yeah, 2086 for the extraction. Like, it's, so it was a long time ago. I mean, the water should just have never been stolen.
The water is also being turned into toxic waste that is further destroying the environment. It's not just the extraction of the water. It's then, it becomes wastewater and, like, waste matter in the process of mining, and you end up with, yeah, millions of tons of
radioactive waste,
which used to be pure, ancient, sacred water.
I guess another part of this legislation that they've pushed through is that they've very sneakily added Oak Dam, which is what they're saying is an extension of the Roxby Downs mine, but it's not that close. It's like quite a few dozen kilometres away. It's, yeah, I think it's like maybe 60 to 80 kilometres away from the Roxby Down site.
And it's categorically not the same environmental area.
No, no. And this Oak Dam potential mine has been included to, I guess, have the same rights.
And exemptions
as the Roxby Downs uranium mine. To get the approvals for Roxby Downs to go ahead, there was quite a lot of requirements.
Including Commonwealth requirements.
Yeah, yeah. That they had to meet to get approvals, but
so they're
now
trying to just tack Oak Dam into,
like,
that, even though it should go through that whole process. And actually an updated process, because that all happened in the 80s. And this whole indenture thing is already a really outdated kind of situation.
Yeah, and they haven't had to do... I mean, yeah, to be clear, Oak Dam was not included in the original legislation. It's just been, tacked on, like Reed said. And they haven't had to do any environmental impact statements. Like Oak Dam, the Oak Dam site hasn't. And they, yeah, I think the only environmental impact statements that they've done haven't been the proper, like, to the proper degree. They're just smaller ones, and they're just for exploration licenses. They're not for mining. Like, they haven't been approved to mine. And I think part of the scary part of all of this is, like, how unanticipated this whole thing was. Like, you know, people...
We thought we had 10 years.
Yeah, to, like, prepare. And it was very kind of on the back burner. And, I mean, we were having conversations with Annie and stuff out on Arabana Country last year. And, yeah, it was very, like, oh, yeah, this thing is coming up. Like, keep it in mind for in a decade or so. And, like, or maybe we should start thinking about this. But it was really pushed through really quickly.
Just this week.
Yeah, this week. And I think by the time a lot of people, like, we found out, you know, we coordinate the Nuclear Free Collective. I would like to think we're pretty adapted to at least the lines of communication.
We try to stay up to date, you know?
Yeah. And I think on, like, yeah, over the weekend, and I think the submissions closed on Tuesday. Like, this past Tuesday or Wednesday?
I think it might have been Monday, but yeah, it was a few days ago.
Yeah, so
actually, I first found out about this because it was on the front page of a newspaper.
Yeah, the copper. Well, what they're saying is
Oak Dam is for copper mining, but there's also
uranium
there.
Yeah, but they...
And it was really hard for them to get Olympic Dam through and operating because uranium is extremely controversial and everybody knows that it's terrible. So they're leading with this copper thing, but they know that there's uranium there.
Oh, yeah. And it's...
And rare earth minerals and other things. But
yeah, totally. And they commonly... I mean, I think it's a bit of a common strategy. Like, the two, copper and uranium, tend to go together. So should we talk to Annie now?
Yeah.
Cool. And now we've got Annie on the line. Hey, Annie.
Hi, how are you going?
Good. How are you?
Yep, getting warm, the fire's going, it's all good.
Sounds delightful.
We wanted to ask you, Annie, we've just been talking about the Roxby Downs Indenture Act and tried to give a little bit of context as to what that is and what have been the recent changes. But you've been involved and around that area for a really long time. We just wanted to hear a bit from you about what it was like and what was going on around Roxby Downs and Olympic Dam mine at the time that this Indenture Act was coming into play in 1982. What was going on for you and what was it like at that time?
Okay, so 1982, we were down on the Franklin, and we were hearing news over the radio that the Roxby Downs, it had been on the sort of increase, this whole interest in mining in South Australia. And because it was a uranium mine, there was a lot of concern about it. And we were listening, and at one time they were saying, no, it's not going to go ahead, and then it would change, and, oh, it's looking more likely. And so it sort of went, the state government was a Labor government and they didn't really want the mine. There'd been already federal studies done and input about the radioactive elements of the mine. And there was a lot of contention about it. And it was literally when it came to a vote in the state parliament, it was actually, yes, a Labor person crossed the floor to vote with the Liberals. So it must have been a Liberal government that was actually in at the time. So it was a Labor person that crossed the floor to vote with the Liberals to allow the mine to go ahead. So once that had happened, this indenture, which is a legislative act, the Roxby Downs Indenture Ratification Act of 1982, is a really large document of huge mind-boggling phrases and connections, and it overrides a lot of state government acts. It was really stitched up so that BHP, well, at the time it was Western Mining, BP and the state government, who were parties to the act, and they pretty much had it so that the companies had the upper hand at all levels, and the state, because they could see that it could bring in money for them, supported everything that was required to make this venture happen, which included things like provision of water, building the Roxby Downs Township, provision of, all the things that they would need to go ahead with this mine without having any sort of fallback position where somebody might come in and say, well, no, this act is precludes you from doing that. The indenture states that it overrides a dozen different acts of parliament if there are any contentions. So essentially,
you saw the importance of this, obviously, at the time. This was a really big deal at the time, and you were off down at the Franklin already being part of a huge effort there to change the course of history. And how did you respond? What did you do?
Well, the thing is, the Franklin Dam was stopped on the 22nd of July. We left the Franklin River. That was 1983. So, because I was down there all that from the end of 82 right through till the dam was stopped. And so we left the river, and we basically went straight to Roxby from the Franklin.
And what was it like when you got there?
Oh, it was pretty amazing. I mean, we were in the forests of Tasmania, and then we came to the mainland, hitchhiked across through the Coorong, got to Adelaide. Al and I, on a motorbike, went up to Roxby to check things out. We got to the gates of the mine, and there we met Max Thomas and Ninjal Reed at the gates of the mine, two Indigenous people from that area. So we straight away formed a connection. We were there to, the blockade was about to happen. We were the forward party, as in checking the roads. And yeah, so one little story that's always worth telling is we get to the gates, we camp the night. The next day, one group comes up from the south up the Woomera Road, another group comes up through Andamooka to the eastern gate. The mob that came on the eastern gate came from Sydney. They were so exhausted, all they did was just get off the bus, and they went straight over the fence into Roxby and camped the night inside the mine lease, which was pretty, you know, pretty remarkable. They didn't even think twice about it, just straight in. And then the next day, the people from the south came and basically got through the gates on the southern side and bounced all the trucks and so forth that were blocking the road. They bounced them off the road, and the whole blockade just poured into Roxby. So
such a funny visual.
Oh, yeah, it was full on. And Maxie says, go to Ironstone Road. So we all go to Ironstone Road, and that's where we camped, and we stayed there for a year. So in that time, they were doing, there was only the Wien and Shaft, and there was a pilot plant being built to do preliminary studies of the ore body contents that were coming out and what they could do with those. And so it was all very preliminary stages. And from 1982, it took years for the EISs to be done and all the evaluations and all those things to be done, till finally in 1986 was when the special mining lease was actually awarded to Roxby, which meant that they could then control that area of Roxby and they could do their mining operations uninhibited. But that was a big process to get it to that point from their respect, you know. So in that time, we'd been evicted along with Kukata elder Maxie Thomas from the mine site. That was a year after. That was 1984. And our baby boy was 10 days old as we were evicted from that site. And it went, you know, into further checking of the water. They needed to get water. And the state government, when you look at the indenture, it has that the state will provide what is required for the mine to operate. So water was sort of automatically given, a given that water would be provided from the state or by the state. And with the underground water supply that they found up at the lowest point of the Great Artesian Basin, 90 k's to the north of the mine site, we're in the vicinity of the Mound Springs. This is where they've been taking and extracting up to 42 million litres a day of the underground system for 42 years now. So in that time, 1986, when the special mining lease was declared, they were sort of coming up to a level where they'd built enough infrastructure to start production. And in those then ensuing years, that's when they started to bring out the ore, mill it, and start exporting it to other areas for basically upgrading of the ore. In its raw form, it was sort of like it was getting the raw materials out, and then it was going to other countries or other areas to be then reinforced into other elements that they needed to use for their nuclear power plant or their whatevers. You know, we say, they say it doesn't go to nuclear weapons, but once it goes into nuclear power plants and the plutonium is produced, there's no longer a tracking between the nuclear power plants and nuclear weapons. So our uranium is contributing across the world to the whole nuclear arms race and all the power plants that have had issues, such as Fukushima. It's a direct relationship between Fukushima and Roxby uranium. It was our uranium that is melting down into the Pacific right now. So, you know, the indenture is the thing that kind of sealed the deal for them in terms of having this really watertight agreement that has been really, really difficult for a very long time to track where we could claim there are breaches of the conditions. We keep bringing forward evidence to show that the water is being depleted from the underground system. We know that there's contamination from the tailings of radioactive materials going into the underground water systems that then goes into the deep underground systems that connect with other areas around there. We know that this is happening, but we, to be able to contest this is the word that I was looking for. To contest this indenture has been extremely difficult.
BHP really gave themselves the upper hand with that one.
Yeah. And in the next 10 years, it was to be the case that the indenture would, or the special mining lease, was coming up to be renewed. And the indenture at that time would also be renewed. And it was a period of time where you could see that there may be potential to be able to challenge some of the issues of that bill that had been ongoing for 50 years. So that was a process that was very much in front of mind to be able to find the evidence to show that this mine is having a really, really detrimental effect on so many levels in South Australia. And when we were able to kind of get to a point of challenging this whole situation, we now find that, unbeknownst to anybody, the South Australian government and BHP have formulated a variation deed, which they have introduced into the parliament to modify the indenture to bring it up to speed for now. And they passed that just the other day in the House of Assembly in South Australia with 10 days of public consultation prior, and 6 of those days, nobody even knew it was happening. So in the last 4 days before that bill was passed, people did what they could to address the issues, but it was never going to be enough. They wouldn't allow any extension of time. It was all passed very quickly. And all those things that need to be challenged and still are needing to be challenged, they just kind of get wiped. You know, they just renew the whole thing. It all just gets put over, and it all just goes ahead, you know,
without scrutiny, without transparency. Yeah. And it's hard to believe. I mean, it's amazing that because there were public submissions that were made even within the tiny time frame, the secretive time frame that was offered. But then it went to Parliament the following day.
Less than 24 hours after our submissions got in there.
It's hard to believe anyone even would have read them.
I don't think they did. You know, it's just a blatant, again, it's happening at Roxby, it's happening in so many places. Everything is being fast-tracked to develop these minerals that people are seeing they can make a lot of money out of, essentially, is what everyone's running for. So as part of this variation deed, There's another development, Oak Dam, which is just to the south of Roxby. It is on the same graben as in this ginormous ore body that contains copper, gold and uranium. This Oak Dam is in exploration stage. It hasn't even had the assessments done just for exploration, which assessments are minuscule. You know, they're not really very big at all. So what they've done is with this mining license that is EL dot, 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 like it's a number, it's an exploration license, they've now, with this bill, incorporated that into the special mining lease for the whole Roxby operation. Now, this Oak Dam has not had any adequate EISs, nothing. There's been very little Aboriginal consultation of an official way, and the whole thing has been pushed through under this indenture that has now been modified, and any renewal date has been pushed back 10 years. The water license that everybody was hoping would be, especially for Borefield A in the vicinity of the Mound Springs, where the springs are really being impacted by the extraction of the water, we were wanting that to be shut down, that Borefield A, because it's having really detrimental impacts. Well, that is now being locked in to at least another further 10 years of pumping. So all these things are really out of the blue, a real shock. It's really, really undermining people's confidence in any sort of legal processes in terms of true justice, true accountability, any real substance to when they say, you know, that this is a sustainable operation. It's only sustainable in the fact that it keeps getting fed by the state government with everything it needs. It's not sustainable environmentally. It's not sustainable health-wise for the people of South Australia. The contaminations are very widespread. They're in the water, in the air, on the land. In Andamooka, 9 out of 10 health concerns are greater in Andamooka than anywhere else in South Australia. It's the same in Woomera. 9 out of 10 health issues are higher than anywhere else in South Australia. In South Australia, per se, it has higher than average illnesses detectable than anywhere else nationally. Now, we don't have the figures as yet to prove these things, but we know that people are, you know, impacted by cancers, impacted by all sorts of really deep, serious health issues. And it's only a matter of time before these things do become provable. But in that same amount of time, people are dying of this contamination. The land is dying of what is happening to it. I mean, all the trees in the vicinity of Roxby Downs, this whole mile forest, kwandongs, all sorts of beautiful fruit trees and all sorts of beautiful animals in the landscape, they're all dying. The springs, the Mound Springs are dying. Hergett Springs, 60 k's from where Roxby's drawdown is occurring, those springs have gone. They've dried up completely. Maori was built on the availability of water at Hergett Springs. 60 k's to the other way, the bubbler, it has depleted enormously over the time that Roxby's been pumping there. There is very little doubt in anyone's minds who goes there, who's been studying this area, who sees what's happened and who sees what's happened in that 50 years, that it's all, the money might be great, but the land is dying and it's going to have enormous consequences for a very, very long time. So, yeah, it's what's happened recently is quite heartrending. It's my son has never been able to be in his birthplace. And this is a message that we are destroying this country where our children can't even go to where they're born. You know, it's like, what are we doing and where are we going? We've really got to lift our thinking to understand that it's up to all of us to take part and to stop a lot of these things that are happening, because it's getting out of control and nobody's listening. Nobody, kulani wea is what old Yami Lester said. Nobody's listening. The government, nobody is listening. So, yeah, that's, you guys are though. Kulani oa.
Well,
yes,
and,
you
and
are
our
listening.
Listeners. Our listeners are listening.
Yes. Yep. And that's amongst ourselves. We've got to keep going. We've got to keep really building the energy. And people on every street corner have a part to play in looking after this country. Yep.
Absolutely. Manju and I are recording here at 3CR in Naam, really in the big smoke. And yeah, it is. There's definitely a bit of an out of sight, out of mind element to the remoteness of the site, but water connects us all.
Yeah.
Mm. And yeah, I guess like that water being the Great Artesian Basin, like that's, that basin is underneath a third of the continent.
Yeah.
It's.
Well, and the thing is too, to also remember that all the basins, even though one might be the Great Artesian Basin, one might be the Murray-Darling Basin, another's the Officer Basin, or but they're all interconnected as well. This is the thing, you know, water, it will just always gravitate to the lowest point. And when you think about that, the Great Artesian Basin's lowest point is right there at Lake Eyre, which is right where they're taking the water.
Mm.
So all the water, yep, they might have still, you know, pumping away. But what's happening in Western Queensland? Or what's happening in Western New South Wales? I mean, all these areas, they're going to be draining off to keep feeding that place at the bottom. I mean, water flows to the lowest point.
Yeah.
So that's another thing to always remember, that yes, it's all interconnected, and it's really important that we address these things in a major way, you know, and water is a way to do that, because people all over the country are concerned for their water.
Water is life. Yeah. Well, this is obviously a really ongoing problem that has just, and it feels like a new chapter is kind of starting with this change to the plan of when the indenture would be reviewed. So it's something that we'll be following closely on the Radioactive Show and in the Nuclear Free Collective. And we will do what is necessary to protect the Mound Springs and stop BHP from continuing to do what they do until 2086.
Well, yeah, that's what Uncle Kev said. Don't stop till we've won. That was, one of the things that he left us with. So,
There's no choice, is there? I mean, for the future of the whole country, we've got to keep going.
Mm.
For the future of the human, you know, story. It's worldwide and we've got to keep going and,
Well, thank you so much for joining us, Annie. It's really, really wonderful to talk to you and learn from you and continue to work with you. Thank you.
Yep. Well, it's been great being with you guys, and all the very best and love to all out there.
That was Annie McGovern. Always such a pleasure talking to her, and so many great stories, and talking to someone that's still around and has been around that issue for such a long time is so, I don't know, I guess when you're young, you're kind of like, whoa, wait, you're alive then?
Like, yeah, it's definitely inspiring.
Yeah.
In terms of like, yeah, we're just going to keep doing this.
Well, yeah, to see like, I mean, it's also like sad in a way, but yeah, it is also very inspiring and like the amount of like energy and like tenacity that Annie still has. It's really, it is inspiring.
And we're so much stronger for this kind of intergenerational knowledge and conversation and work that we get to do with people like Annie.
Yeah.
We get to keep it up.
Yeah, and you're not reinventing the wheel every time. And yeah, Annie, Al, Uncle Kev, there's so many people that, yeah, have so much of knowledge and are so good and like willing and know the importance of passing that on. So that's, we're glad you guys got to listen to Annie talk. And yeah, speaking of Uncle Kev, we are also going to play something from the archive, a recording of Uncle Kev.
An amazing activist against the Olympic Dam uranium mine has been Uncle Kevin Buzzacott, Arubana man. And we're going to hear from him now talking to Kat up at the Australia Nuclear Free Alliance meeting in Darwin. And he has some more special messages for BHP.
So we just finished up the AMPA 2008 meeting. We're sitting here with activist veteran Uncle Kevin Buzzacott. Uncle Kev, what's the state of play this year? Has it changed much?
There's a lot of things happening this year with that intervention that it's running amok up here, scaring people up here. People don't know how to deal with it. I think it's a scare tactic as well as it's a land grabbing thing where they can scare people off their land and all that other stuff with that policy. I can't explain it technically, right? But yeah, we've got that up in the territory here. I think people have to be aware. I think it's like a test sort of thing. If it happens here, if the government can get control of that here for their purpose, not for our purpose, if it works for them here, I believe they'll implement it in South Australia. Could be the next step, next place to do it. And also it'll go to it'll definitely go to Western Australia as well as Queensland and South Australia, probably all over, because it's a control thing. But I want you people to be out there speaking for your rights, and they can't have you protesting and rallying around the place. I think people really have to look at that and try to work out how we can combat it.
What are the big ideas for trying to put an end to this nonsense?
I think there's a lot of things. One of the big things we're talking about, we're always sort of down in numbers because people out there sitting down, sitting back on the backside, they need to come out with us. The government now is really, the move here now is really full on with the waste dump, with the proposed waste dumps, as well as the uranium mines. Now, they haven't got far to go, because they've got the railway line that goes from south to the north, as well as coming over from the west, and as well as coming over from the east. So the whole idea is for them to bring all their uranium stuff up the, onto that new line, up into the Port Darwin, and then out from there into the countries by ship, instead of it going right around the bottom. They're really playing for keeps. The waste dumps, proposed waste dumps, are near the railway lines. It's not too far. Whatever the raw stuff that goes out and the waste come back in, that'll be, they haven't got far to go to dump it. And I think, as I've said too, also that the past rallies, blockades and stuff that we've been doing all around the country, I think we've treated it like a learning curve. We've learned it. We know about it now, but this one here, we learned it because of this. We got to really get strong here this time. So we need numbers, we need to campaign, funding and all that sort of stuff, court action, blockades and all that sort of stuff. So, hey, people, get it, you know, people out there, you know, we just got to move and do it, otherwise they're gonna nail us.
Unks, do you want to make a comment on the expansion of Roxby and the EIS coming out February next year sometime?
Yeah, that's another one. We're all worried about what's going to happen at Roxby, and with that expansion, with the open cup, that's going to be awful. That really is the nail in the coffin. After the meeting we had out here, the gathering here this weekend, we're going out to Ranger tomorrow to visit and see the big open cut out there. I mean, it's a big devastation or big destruction out there, but with Roxbury going ahead, it's going to be, the expansion of Roxbury is going to be double the size of that pen. So people really need to wake up.
And BHP AGM is going to be late November in Melbourne, and we hope to see you down there stirring them up. But what would be the big message that you'd be sending to BHP company and their shareholders?
What we've been saying to them, as well as all these giant mining companies, is to just stop it. Just stop it. Now the time's come, the damages, there's that much destruction going on. Stop all that development. Hey, we've got to start, it's about time we start looking at peace, not only for ourselves, but for the land. Begin the healing, begin repairing and healing the whole country as well.
You're listening to The Radioactive Show, recorded at 3CR and broadcast nationally. And that was Uncle Kevin Buzzacott, Arrabunna man and long-term activist against the Olympic Dam uranium mine at Roxby Down, South Australia.
Thanks for joining us for another week of The Radioactive Show on 3CR 855 on your AM dial. We will be continuing to go through the archives and bringing you news and stories from the last 50 years up until now of resistance to radioactive racism.
And the other thing is Radiothon is starting soon, and I believe the theme is 50 years of 3CR. The Radioactive Show has been going since almost the beginning of that. I believe. I think it was going under the title of The Radioactive Show since 1977. And in 1976, there was a different radioactive show called Non-Nuclear Futures. So we're claiming it since the beginning of 3CR.
If you've been here. If you've been here since day one, that's crazy. We personally, I wasn't alive, but we are connected to the last 50 years of 3CR. So please support The Radioactive Show, support 3CR. None of this is possible without membership, fully independent voice of the community, voices that really need to be heard, stories that really need to be told. So thank you so much for being here with us and for supporting the station.
3CR celebrating 50 years.
Did you enjoy listening to that podcast? 3CR is a community radio station, and you, the listener, are a part of that community. Right now, it's our Radiothon. We need you to pitch in with a few dollars to keep the station going. We can't do it without you. It's easy. Head to 3cr.org.au/donate. Your donations really matter.